Quintessential with your hosts John Coos and Scott Martinez.
All right, welcome to another episode of Quintessential.
The longer welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back.
Welcome back.
Gen X 80s with John and Scott. Since our last podcast, we have had a pretty great showing of people listening to the podcast. I checked the stats. We're almost at 250 downloads.
Nice.
That's pretty cool.
That's great. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah. And we were talking about the ditch and playing wiffle ball. So hopefully we'll talk about more culturally relevant things. But this episode, we're going to talk about music in the 80s.
And you know, it's funny. Go ahead. Just one second, real quick. Because of what I don't know if you heard me sing the theme song to Welcome Back Cotter a second ago when I was saying welcome back. Welcome back. But, you know, there was a lot of TV soundtrack songs that definitely have made a difference in my life. But we'll get into all that stuff later. But it's funny how music comes from all different sources.
That's for sure. I should say that since our last podcast, also, we have been approved on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. So,
and Spotify.
I think we got the big three. Yeah, Spotify, too. So nobody can complain about it being on a platform they would never go on or something like that, sort of an Apple-Google war or something like that. So that's all good stuff. So let's get into it. So I'm gonna take a first shot at asking you, like, when you talk about music when you were growing up, like, what's your earliest remembrances of it?
You know, my earliest remembrances of music are through my parents, of course. But my parents weren't huge music listeners that I remember. My mom, though, she loved her Linda Ronstadt and Barbara Streisand, especially. And so we had a portable record player that had denim on the outside look. I guess it was like blue jeans or something. And I would play her over and over again, her Don't You Make My Brown Eyes Blue single from Linda Ronstadt over and over again for her. And I was pretty young, but I remember being excited to be able to play it for her. And she would love to hear it over and over again. So cool. It really started there. But also, I remember having seven inches that I played on that for that record player that were like Scooby-Doo mystery records or whatever, and you had the book to read. And we had Charlie Brown Christmas, a 7-inch record.
Like that stuff?
Yeah, well, no. You remember the Christmas special? Where they had to talk about Christmas tree and all stuff? It was like the story of that, and it had a book to go along with it.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I still have those, actually.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of cool.
That was one good thing about the bar. It preserved a lot of history in the sense that nobody cared about it. So there was a lot of records. There's like a whole thing built inside the bar where records could go into it. It's four records. I don't know why. I mean, they had a record player there, and they had a reel-to-reel that my brother would use to record playing guitar on or something. But it was full of records. And so most of them I could care less about. Both my parents are from Puerto Rico, so they grew up listening to a lot of the Puerto Rican musicians or whatever. So there's a lot of Puerto Rican music in there, which, going back, I'd probably enjoy it now more than I did as a young boy or a teen. But also in there were those 7-inches would happen to be in there. And you know, there were some good little things like the Grease soundtrack or something thrown in there. And my parents used to listen to watch musicals. Like my dad loved Fiddler on the Roof. He would sing the songs all the time out of nowhere. So whenever Fiddler on the Roof was on TV, we'd watch it. And it's like a 3-hour movie or something. KTLA would show it every once in a while, and we'd all watch it.
Well, that bar would be a good place for records, because if you're throwing a big party and you're serving drinks, then you got your records right there.
Yeah. So maybe that shows that it was used at some time as actually something cool.
You know that Linda Ronstadt, who she dated in the 70s, right?
I don't know, but I know she did record with Barney on The Simpsons.
She dated Jerry Brown, our governor.
Oh wow!
When he was governor the first time, yeah. But yeah, that's cool. I mean, I don't know. My first album that I probably listened to over and over again, back when I was like a kid, not like a teenager, was like the Country Bear Jamboree soundtrack from the Disneyland show.
Right.
Which, you know, and so when I went to Disneyland, I knew it by heart because I listened to the record over and over again. But then they changed it to Vacation Bears, and then they later changed it to the Winnie the Pooh ride. So that's all gone from history. But
you know, it's funny going to Disneyland. One of the things I used to love was America Sings.
Yeah.
I used to love going to America Sings.
America Sings was awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And I was sad when that went away. But they took all the animals from there and put them in the waterfall slide or something.
Splash Mountain.
Splash Mountain. But yeah, I mean,
just kind of repurposed them all.
Yeah. Clap your hands and stomp your feet and try to keep right with us. And then the whole thing would move, the stage would rotate. There's like three different stages where you would rotate to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They had repurposed that building before our time. It was originally the Carousel of Progress, which was like futuristic furniture and things like that. I don't know if you knew that or not. But
I don't recall that part. I do enjoy American Sings.
I don't want to get grim, but there's Disneyland lore that, you know, when that building rotated, that an employee got stuck in between like the walls when it like rotated, and I think they got crushed. Have you heard that lore?
I have, but also heard about the girl who was murdered during roller coaster recording, which isn't true either, but that was the whole...
What roller coaster recording?
Roller coaster. That song? Hear a scream, sounds like a scream at some point during the song, and there was always this urban legend that someone was murdered while the song was being recorded. You can Google it. I think it's in a thing.
Yeah.
But it's not true.
So aside from Scooby-Doo and Country Bear Jamboree stuff, I'll tell you, like, the first three albums that were legit albums that I had, I think I received all around the same time, which was Go-Go's Beauty and the Beat.
And then
AC/DC Back in Black and Rush Moving Pictures.
Now, my recollection is different than that. My recollection is when you got Beauty and the Beat, it was a birthday present, but you also got Built for Speed and I think another Stray Cats record at that time.
Oh, maybe I forgot about that. It's funny. When I was in sixth grade or whatever, there was that rockabilly. There was a couple of kids that were all into rockabilly, and so I must have got that album, the Stray Cats album. But it got kind of tedious for me, I think, over time. Maybe I don't know why. But I forgot about that.
You definitely had Built for Speed. I know you did.
Is that the Stray Cats album? That was the big one, the Stray Cats strut and all that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the AC/DC thing. I mean, there's a guy in your grade who I guess I won't name, but lived kind of near West Grove Park that was kind of all into heavy metal and rock. Do you know what I'm talking about? Gary A.
Yeah.
Gary A. Let's go with Gary A. And, so here's the
thing. So you're saying you want to talk about Gary A.
No. I don't want to necessarily talk about
Gary A. No, it was a joke. Those references that Gary A said at one time when we were... So you're saying you want to go?
Well, I think the thing about me, and I have to own this, is that I have been influenced a lot by people I was hanging around with. And so Gary A was, you know, he had a lot of albums, a lot of rock albums, a lot of Ozzy Osbourne and all that.
Right. But you know what's kind of funny, though? When you actually look back in it, some of that stuff was actually top 40 music. So it wasn't necessarily something that wasn't popular amongst a lot of people.
I don't think Crazy Train was like on Kiss FM.
Yeah, I mean, I think more AC/DC. Maybe Tom Sawyer or something like that from Rush.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you don't hear a lot of... I mean, Back in Black is... an album I still listen to actually from time to time, and it's I guess, usually listed in the top 20 albums of all time. And it's actually funny because they kind of are my bucket list of to go see him in concert, but I just never did it. And I think Brian Johnson might not be with us anymore. So it would be like, you know, kind of an anticlimactic if they had a different front man. But I, you know, as you know, you know, there was also this weird time, and my mom was very, very religious and whatnot, you know, forcing neighborhood kids to go to vacation Bible school or whatever. But that AC/DC was like, or kind of considered like Satan worship, like,
well, Rush definitely was
Antichrist, devil's children, and all that stuff. And I don't know, but I do know it's not. It's not Satan worship, but for whatever reason, you know, quickly, I just kind of abandoned that stuff. And I kind of, and so the next kind of influencer on me was actually Darren, your next door neighbor, because what was he listening to?
Well, he was into prog rock, didn't he? Like Dream Theater and
Marillion.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't like the Marillion stuff, but I mean,
I think Marillion and whatever other prog rock you can come up with.
Well, yeah, I mean,
but then again, Kraftwerk was originally a prog rock type band before they became
most prog rock.
It's kind of like that's a good question for. I mean,
it's like production rock or something, sort of like a theater rock.
It's kind of like, yeah, it's definitely theater. It's definitely more theatrical type music.
Well, they kind of. I never got into it because, like, Marillion.
Like, you got Marillion. You look at them. I mean, it's like
12, but they have like 12-minute songs that are right. Like a combination of rock and roll in like a Renaissance fair or something.
Right.
You know,
it's very kind of strange, theatrical.
But that's not what it was, because, you know, I spent a lot of time with him in his car because he was older. You know, and he drove me places, and he listened to a lot of Madness and like Men at Work and stuff. So I can't say, and I like Madness a lot, and I like ska.
No, I love music, Madness.
A lot. And I can safely say that, you know, thanks Darren for Madness, because why would I have like gotten into like Madness? Right. But when it comes to, and then you,
right. I mean, I think we're getting ahead of ourselves, I think, but we'll finish what you're saying. Are we? Yeah.
Well, maybe so, but I was just talking about my early influence.
Right. I'll talk about mine after this.
Well, I'll talk about yours. Back. We could talk about yours because
it's actually relevant
to mine, because yours influenced mine. So why don't you tell us, like, when did you start really getting into I guess K-rock music, as we can call it.
Right, but I'm going way earlier than that. We got to go back to the 9690, my friend.
The 9690 and Stars on 45?
Well, Stars on 45. They played Safety Dance on the 9690. Yeah, I mean, the 9690 was AM. And the green car, the Valiant we had, only had an AM radio in it.
That's right.
But I would have to fight my parents to put on the 9690 so I could listen to more contemporary music. And yeah. There was a lot of great stuff that was on the 9690. Safety Dance was definitely on there. Darks on 45. So it was rather eclectic, but it wasn't top 40 per se.
It was top 40.
It was top 40-ish. Yeah, it was top 40 plus other nostalgic things from the past that were big.
Yeah. Well, that Stars on 45, I almost, before we started doing this, I almost wanted to like look it up on YouTube, like that song.
I'll tell you a funny story. Mashup.
You had the single, I think.
I think I did too, but I'll tell you a funny story is my girlfriend's uncle knows that I love music, whatever. So he made me a CD, and that song actually was on there. So I got to listen to it recently, that song. And I can't imagine they played the full length version of that song on my 690. It's like 18 minutes long.
Well, but I do think you owned it though.
I'll own the fact that I owned it.
That's fine. I don't even
I don't feel bad about owning that. It was a classic.
Was that the name of the song and the band?
The band? No, Stars on 45 was the band. I think they had other songs too. I don't know if they were all songs based on other band songs, but that one definitely was.
All right. So you're right. I did omit the Mighty 690, and it was on AM, and it was important because, you know, like you said, like back then there could have been an old radio in the garage or in a car that didn't even have FM. And I just remember there being a lot of commercials on that channel.
I don't remember. I do remember, though, that, I mean, that was the only thing I could get in that green car was, and but I enjoyed it as well. But I mean, what year would that be? That would be still in the '70s, or actually early '80s.
So 79, K-Rock, 80, 81.
When did K-Rock start? Do we know?
It's in the '70s, but yeah, I'll tell you another song that was on there a lot, like Blondie and Debbie Harry stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of great classic stuff on there.
No, there was. It was good. It was good stuff. But when did? Okay, so you mentioned in the last podcast that, you know, your brother Joe and your tastes are kind of pretty aligned these days. But, you know, was he a major influence on any of your early, like, sort of, I guess you'd call it K-rock or progressive alternative?
For sure, he definitely was. Even with The Cure, but also, I remember one day being sick and finding his Violent Femmes cassette and going, this is awesome, and listen to it all day long. Plus, another thing we need to get to eventually is soundtracks. A lot of influential soundtracks in our youth. Sure. And one of them...
I forgot a big one, actually. You're right.
One of them that would be contributed to my brother would be the Repo Man soundtrack, of all things. There's a lot of punk stuff on that. But it also, it had Black Flag's TV Party, which I think you probably know that song, right? TV Party Tonight. We're going to have a TV party tonight. But the thing that really I enjoyed to begin with was it had a Spanish version of Secret Agent Man on it. Hombre Siquero. And it was all in Spanish by the band called The Plugs. But also had the song Repo Man was by Iggy Pop, and it was really good as well. Yeah. But I can go back for us soundtrack-wise. All the way to going to see The Jazz Singer in the theater and knowing all those songs from The Jazz Singer.
Oh, and we used to, so that's the thing. You know, we didn't have a lot of stuff. So, like, I had the cassette for that Neil Diamond thing. I think, you know, my mom had the Station Wagon or whatever. And we would listen to that album a lot. Like, Love of the Rocks.
Yeah, I know those.
Ain't no big surprise. Yeah. And then the other one was that Kenny Rogers Greatest Hits, I think. That we listened to, with The Gambler and all that stuff. So you're right. I mean, there was earlier stuff than that, but I wouldn't exactly say that defined our
music. Maybe not, but it definitely defined our moment. I mean, we listened to that soundtrack for the
Well, the other two, soundtracks that we owned that I listened to from the late 70s was Grease.
Grease, yes. And that was one of the records, I think, that was in my parents' thing. But Grease was another one, yeah.
And oddly enough, and it's kind of funny, not oddly enough, but the movie soundtrack of the Bee Gees, Peter Frampton, Sgt. Pepper movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. It's a double record, wasn't it?
I think it was a double record. And the funny thing about that, even though, obviously, like I'd heard Beatle music, I mean, it's kind of weird, and maybe it's considered sacrilegious or sad, that the first time I really knew Beatles songs were from that movie.
Right. Well, but Steve Martin's in that movie.
And so is Alice Cooper.
Yeah. But he was like the Maxwell Silverhammer.
It was Dr. Maxwell or whatever. But, by the way, just a little plug. I just saw the Bee Gees documentary. I think it's HBO. It's really, actually I have new respect for the Bee Gees, but that's a whole other thing. I think we were forced to. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's bad music or anything. Obviously, disco really influenced a lot of the music that we ended up listening to in, I guess, the new, you know, the alternative world. You know, to some extent, like Jimmy Somerville and all those kinds of bands, or even, you know, Erasure doing, you know, ABBA covers and things like that. I mean, everybody knew all those songs from Saturday Night Fever, and it's just part of like the culture, right? We couldn't avoid it.
But the thing is, too, though, I mean, when you take disco, you've got a lot of great things that can make great songs. You got some great bass lines. I mean, I don't know how many times nowadays that we've listened to songs where the bass line was sampled from this disco song or this old song or.
Gloria Gaynor.
There's, I mean, that's something that makes a song great, is a great bass line. And especially for our, you know, electronic styled music, yeah. You know, you got a good bass line in there. It really gets the song going. And those disco songs had a lot of amazing, amazing bass lines in them.
Yeah, yeah, you're totally right. But it still begs the question. You were in the middle of talking about how, like, you found that Violent Femmes tape. I mean, it was that kind of like this moment where you kind of, I'm going to start rating all of my brother's stuff and start listening to it all.
Well, you know, it's funny. We definitely, I mean, we had crossover stuff, and we talk about it like New Order and whatnot. But you remember those one set? You could buy a record, buy 10 cassettes for 1 cent, and then buy two.
The Columbia Record and Tape Club.
My brother and I got an idea that when I was probably 11 or something, I don't know how old I was, but definitely young. He's like, you know, if you do that, they can't go after you because you're a minor. So you just have to keep the cassettes. So why don't you sign up? We'll split the cassettes. I'll pick half of it. You pick half of it. And then we'll just throw away anything they send to you because they can't come after you because you're a kid. So we did that. I remember Romeo Void being one of the cassettes in it. But unfortunately, my dad found out about our little plan and made me send all the cassettes back.
Okay, just for those who don't understand, the basic program was the hook that they would have would be something like buy one album and get 12 for a penny, right? But
right.
But that was the main sell. But the subtext was, oh, and by the way, you're committed to buying 10 a year for the next 2 years at full price or something.
Right, which would be like $30 each or some crazy amount.
Yeah, exactly. I did that later with CDs, I think, but I didn't do any like scam or cheat or anything like that. I just did the math and I just did it back then. But I remember you guys doing that actually. So are you saying that because of that you just ordered like a whole bunch of stuff?
Well, no, I mean,
Did you guys pull the scam off for a couple times first?
No, we didn't get it at all. My dad found out right away. We got the cassettes, and I opened the thing and whatnot, but then my dad found out right away, and we sent back all the original cassettes. Nothing ever good happened from that. I mean, nothing good was happening from the beginning with, I guess, if we were scamming, trying to scam something, but...
Yeah, so... And I mentioned in the first podcast that... that your brother and you had all these cool pictures of like Led Zeppelin and all that stuff. I remember one of the cool things about stuff on his wall was he would have flyers for bands, bands playing it in Los Angeles, like the Roxy or wherever else. Like I remember him having a Go-Go's flyer, like imagine a flyer, like maybe even before they even put out Beauty and the Beat. And I think like things like the Dead Kennedys. I think he used to see. I remember those flyers on his wall.
Yeah, I mean there was a big punk thing going on. He was in it. He was in his own bands, and so they had all those flyers. All the old punk flyers. I remember seeing them all over the place all the time. And in fact, he used to have a flyer where his band was in front of. God, I can't remember the name of the other band now. That became much more famous.
The Squids?
No.
The Untouchables?
No, it's a punk band that everyone goes to see every year now or whatever. Gosh.
Like TSOL or something?
It'll come to me. No. It's a...
Black Flag?
No. This is like a really popular K-Rock band. They had a whole album that came out. Sick Boy. Oh, Sick Boy. I can't...
Like the Damned?
No, you're way off. That's okay. I know you know the band.
Okay.
I'll look it up real quick. But that band, which later on that became very famous, was like a way low band on that flyer, and his band was ahead of him.
Got it. Yeah. Well, when do you think you made because I think we eventually were like, I don't know if we were snobbish, but we were kind of myopic on sort of the big four kind of groups like The Cure, Depeche Mode, New Order, the Smiths. When did you kind of feel like, okay, this is the kind of stuff I like, to the exclusion of everything else, really?
It was about when I was like 11 or so. I convinced you that there was no more needing your Rush albums or your AC/DC albums. Social Distortion.
Okay, fair enough. I thought, yeah, Social D. Yeah. Sort of punk light.
Right.
Yeah.
But
punk that you could actually understand the lyrics and stuff.
Right. Listening to early K-Rock, I mean, I used to record on a cassette, you know, top 106.7 songs going all the way back to the very early 80s. And I remember that's really where, you know, I decided I loved all that stuff and, you know, started going out to buy my Depeche Mode cassettes. And I remember getting from my brother the original Duran Duran record for their first album that doesn't have Please, Please Tell Me Now. It has that one on it. There's someone out there, I think. Whatever song, there's a song on there that's not on the original.
Yeah, like Planet record. Earth or something.
No, Planet Earth was definitely. I think it was, is there something Girls I should know film? Or something or whatever. But there was a song that originally wasn't on it. I had that record because I took it from them eventually.
Oh. Well, yes. Well, Duran Duran, and I'm not deliberately skipping past anything, but I think that was your first sort of big boy concert, right?
No, actually, Franco's Hollywood was.
Oh, Frankie, that's right. Yeah. Well, let's hold off on concerts for just a second. Yeah.
I think we're running ahead of ourselves again. It's so easy to with this music thing.
Well, it's fine. I mean, but I'll tell you, you were, you know, like I said, like, I think you're right. It wasn't as simple as like an intervention in one day to tell me to get rid of this stuff. I think we just started hanging out more and you were really committed to it. Like you were really into Cure and everything.
What happened to me was I realized, and I think it was sometime around Synchronicity, The Police of Synchronicity. And I really love that album. So I'm not saying anything negative about it.
The Police of Synchronicity?
Yeah. Okay. But then I realized how top 40 that album was and listening, like all these people listening to Quiet Riot and all this stuff. And I was like, this stuff just isn't for me. I don't like Quiet Riot. And just because it's popular doesn't mean I need to listen to it.
Well, we can't forget the fact that MTV was just coming on and it was huge. And a lot of, I guess you'd call it heavy metal light was, I mean, you wouldn't call it like Quiet Riot or some of those early bands were heavily in rotation. What's it, Twisted Sister? Heavily in rotation on MTV.
Right.
And there was a lack. And the funny thing was MTV, is as revolutionary as it was, kind of was like a combination of like, it really didn't have, except for like maybe like in the middle of the night, any of the K-Rock type bands. Like
they were sprinkled in there only. Bands on top of the world, and that was things
they were. Well, they were for sure. They Hungry Like the Wolf and all that stuff was in massive rotation, but you never saw The Cure, The Smiths. You might have saw Depeche Mode with like People Are People and, you know, that kind of stuff, but, you know, it just.
Right. That was that like 120 minutes or.
Yeah.
Sunday night. 120 the Rodney on the Rock. Times slot,
yeah, like at midnight or whatever. But
I record them on the VHS, and then I would watch them later.
Did you record songs off of MV3 or Video One with Richard Blade? Those remember those shows?
Yeah,
after school, and they played like Wall of Voodoo, and they played more. Well, because it was Richard Blade, I guess, right? They played more K-Rocky kind of stuff, and right,
yeah. I
used to watch that show after school at Darren's Request house video. All the time. Which one?
Request Video with the Poor Man.
Request Video. Was that what it was called? Request Video?
Yeah, he had his own show. It was on Channel 56.
I think that was later.
That was later in the 80s, yeah.
Yeah, after the Wally George show or something like that. But anyway, I think I just made a switch and like almost like overnight to adopt most of your music catalog and you know I
you
think
went back.
I got I well I think I went I think I got this is back what 83 80, I, probably yeah. more like 84 maybe.
Yeah.
You really, you had a couple of Depeche Mode albums, and I'm not sure if you had Speak and Spell cassette or whatever, but I just went insane and just to buy everything I could by Depeche Mode. And, you know, Master and Servant and People Are People, that time frame, you know.
It was funny. That reminds me, in high school, I think I was a sophomore or something like that, and the teacher was trying to be hip or cool or whatever, and they wanted the ASB wanted people to vote for a song for like the prom or the whatever dance. And instead of saying, like, they want us to vote for a song, he's like, what are the songs you guys like or whatever? And so one guy suggested Master and Servant, not knowing, I don't think, that it was for like the co-ed or the prom, like just to vote for that to be the theme song.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, you can imagine the theme song of the prom being Master and Servant.
A song about subtle bondage and submission, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
With a little bit of a political undertone or some kind. But yeah, and I was so, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I was so into Depeche Mode that when West End Girls came out.
I remember this.
You do?
Yeah.
Go ahead, tell people like what I initially thought that was a Depeche Mode song.
Yeah. You said Depeche Boys.
Yeah, it was like, I couldn't understand they were saying the Pet Shop Boys. I thought they were one of the DJs at K-Rock, like Swedish Eagle or whoever, was saying Depeche Boys or something like that, thinking that it was like a cute nickname for them. And then you're like, what are you talking about?
You can hear the song, you can tell it's not Depeche Mode.
True, but to the discerning 14-year-old ears, I don't know. Maybe it was just also, I don't know, but I did think that was, maybe I thought anything good was Depeche Mode from like, you know, a couple years because they were so good. But yeah. Now,
let's go back. There's two things to talk about, I think, on this one. MTV, but also some of the soundtracks that were big in our time. And two soundtracks that really, 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 really influenced my life, or I enjoyed the most, was one, the Pretty in Pink soundtrack.
Sure.
Which had like If You Leave by OMD on it, and it had
Shellshock by New Order.
Had Shellshock by New Order. Had Bring on the Dancing Horses.
Echo and the Bunnymen for our
Echo and the Bunnymen. It had, I think, in excess, Do What You Do on it. And it also had Please, Please Let Me Dismiss. Please, please let me have what I want. But speaking of, then you go to the Ferris Bueller soundtrack, which I did not listen to, but remembered it having Dream Academy's version of Please, Please Let Me Get What I Want on it. Mm-hmm. Remember that when they're running around in the museum and they're playing?
Oh, I think you're wrong.
Dream Academy cover.
I think it had, maybe it did have that, but there. One of those movies by John Hughes had a girl version of You Just Haven't Earned It Yet, Baby by the Smiths. Maybe Christy McCall did it. And maybe that was in a different, maybe that was in like She's Having a Baby or something. Hello. But can you hear me?
Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Everything just went dead. I don't know if you can hear me.
I can hear you.
Maybe
I can hear you.
I don't know. Can
I could totally hear you. Stop it for a second. All right.
So Chris McCall, they might have been on there, but I definitely remember them running through the museum and it playing Please, Please. And then there was another, Say Anything, had a soundtrack that I'm sure had a lot of great things on it, but I never really got into. I know The Replacements were on there, and of course, Peter Gabriel's big song was on there.
Sure.
But Jumpsuit Sex seemed to have pretty good songs in any movie he was in, soundtrack-wise.
Well, I don't think he had a lot of control over that, but you're right. I mean, he was technically in 16 Candles, but I don't even remember 16 Candles having a solid soundtrack. It probably had some good stuff. But I think you're right about Pretty in Pink. I mean,
it
might be like one of the greatest movie soundtracks ever because, and Ferris Bueller really didn't have a lot of standouts.
No,
like to be honest with you. But anyway,
another big one for me though at that time was Valley Girl, the Valley Girl soundtrack.
Oh, that movie. Yeah. I just watched that movie about a month ago. And the funny thing about that is, you know, the Plimsolls play live in it,
right?
Like twice. But in the movie, that song A Million Miles Away, which is like probably their only like recognizable song of today, was played like twice in the movie and once, I think, in like the credits. But it was a great soundtrack. Actually, a pretty underrated 80s, early 80s movie too. I mean, you should watch it again. I mean, Nicolas Cage was just awesome. But yeah, that was a good
Was a great soundtrack.
Yeah, they had there's that big scene where Eaten by the Monster of Love by the Sparks, where like some kids are fooling around upstairs, and then the mom comes home and whatever. But anyway, you should watch it again. It's pretty funny.
I think everybody out there should watch it again and listen to the music because it's good stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, but yeah, but then you know, you started all of this off with the Mighty 690 in some ways. Like I don't remember when I made a full like shift to K-Rock, but it was pretty much, you know, from like 84 through the end of the decade, like 95% of what I listened to on the radio.
Yeah, it definitely was. I don't know, it was probably more than that for me.
Once in a while I tried to pick up like 91X.
Oh, right, for sure.
Because
it was coming in all right for some reason. And
I think the closer we were to the beach, we could pick it up because I think it was a San Diego station, or maybe it was even an Ensenada station or something. And it would travel better along the coast, the radio waves. But, you know, but it was pretty much K-Rock. And even 91X sometimes might have been even a little too college radio for me. I was kind of trying to mainline like New Order and Depeche Mode like all the time, you know? And so, but yeah, K-Rock had, you know, it was great. It was like 40 minutes of uninterrupted stuff. And it was really like, you just don't turn it off. You don't switch the station, right?
No. Yeah. We definitely didn't want to.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I mean, in full disclosure, there's a couple bands even that, you know, that are now played on First Wave on Sirius XM from that era that even though I like respect, and I even one point I think had one of the albums, I kind of turn off. And it was kind of the same way with like the Talking Heads a little bit. I'm not going to bag on the Police, but I kind of don't listen to Sting or the Police that much anymore. I don't know why. And maybe it's oversaturation or something.
Right. But you had the Talking Heads on cassette.
I had one album. I had that album that was like with Stay Up All Night, the Baby right. Baby.
Yeah, Talking Heads have made a lot of amazing songs. And
I know.
If you really listen to them now, you could see how influential they were because they took from every genre you could think of practically. And they're really an underrated band to a great degree. Now, a band that some people like that I didn't like per se, though the big album I really liked was Midnight Oil. Mm-hmm. I got sick of them pretty fast.
Yeah, I turn them off pretty much now if I could reach the dial. And it's maybe I had that album. I had the cassette for sure, and that, you know, it was good, but yeah.
But there was that was their earlier albums. Some people loved them, but I never was into anything than that one album, as far as they go.
Yeah, I mean they're not exactly. You didn't pick a really huge band, like you didn't say like I didn't really like Erasure or something.
Well, I do like Erasure.
I know, me too. I'm just saying, like, well, I guess it's kind of like me saying I never really got into the Police for whatever.
You really want to get into it? I can get into it, and this is gonna make people not bored. Happy.
You want to talk about Midnight Oil? Please don't.
No, is U2. U2. Oh. I am way over U2 and REM to a large extent, even though I used to love REM.
Yeah, we are jumping around a bit.
Yeah, U2. Music, as far as I'm concerned, which we can talk about at a later time, but the problem I found with U2 is after Joshua Tree, especially, they became a machine. a record producing machine, and put on these gigantic shows and whatnot. And they became the band that everybody wanted to be. And I found a lot of bands, you know, in the 90s and whatnot, putting out a great record because they put their first record was something they wanted to do, and then just overproducing the rest of their work beyond imagine, trying to become U2, the big band that could do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I sort of blame U2 for the demise of music to a certain extent, because everybody wanted to become them, and everybody started overproducing their music when they got a chance. Once they got money, they're like, let's produce this thing to hell, because everyone's going to love it. Mm-hmm. And it just sounds contrite and produced. Whereas their first record is so great because it was them doing what they wanted to do. And then next thing you know, bam, it's just overproduced garbage that is useless.
Yeah, it's popular
to a certain extent, but it loses its soul.
Yeah. It probably was a bigger fall for you than it was for me, because I think you actually liked them before me. Like, I think you had Unforgettable Fire and maybe War.
I love Unforgettable Fire.
And
War.
And Joshua Tree was just such a monster album. It's really good. It's got some really great songs, and it's really a true album. If you like that, don't, you know, a lot of people don't make true albums anymore, where like every song really is like, there's not a ton of throwaway songs, you know, like it's a solid, like they were arguably at their peak with Joshua Tree. And then like after that, like I thought that like Rattle and Hum and some of their immediate stuff was a letdown almost.
Well, yeah. It was overproduced. They became who the band that they could just,
do whatever they wanted, or whatever.
They like had a formula, like 8 + 7 + this is a good hook. Bam, bam, bam. Okay, that's a song. That's a hit. Okay, you got another hit? I can write it down here. Okay, here's another hit for you. You know, and it just, their music became this produced massive stuff of just hits of super produced stuff. And it was like, it just lost its originality to me. But well, still, it became a huge thing. I mean, one of these amazing shows with videos and lights and all that stuff. And it just sort of ruined music because everybody wanted that. Everyone wanted to become U2. And so they're like, oh, we got to write hits. So we got to get a big producer in. We got to overproduce this crap and we could become this incredibly big band or whatever. And to me, it sort of ruined everything.
Wow. That might be a bit harsh.
I mean, look at Depeche Mode. Depeche Mode does not have, even they have a lot of great songs that we all love, whatever, they're not a top 40 band in any way.
No, I mean.
And they produced records for years and years and years that still were true to Depeche Mode is.
I mean, they had definitely had some crossover hits. I mean, right. I don't know where people. They were what?
They were written to be Depeche Mode songs. They weren't written to be hits, I don't think.
Hard to say. I mean, I don't know if People Are People was. I mean, I think you're right.
That's before you two ruined everything with People Are People.
No, I think Depeche Mode definitely has been very consistent and solid and true to their own sound and not gimmicky and try to play to a certain placement on the charts. I think that's true. I think that's definitely true.
I think what I've gotten way ahead of ourselves for a second here, but to this extent, there's one other band, and this was in the 90s into 2000s, that became really big that I don't think became that U2 effect, and that's Radiohead, which I don't know if you're a big Radiohead fan.
I like some of their songs.
But they had their rock thing, and then they put out these two albums that were essentially, you would think, would be killing them. They were completely electronic type albums. They had nothing, sounded nothing like the way they used to, and they were amazing albums. And they've moved on from there, and they've kept their music pretty true to themselves, even though they're a huge stadium band. I don't think they're really Red Hot Chili Peppers have done that. I think they've become hit writing machine. And I used to like the early Chili Peppers, but they became a hit writing machine, I think, mm-hmm. over the years, where they're just a massive thing because they write hits.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they lost their soul as well.
Maybe that's probably a fair argument to an extent. That, I mean, I think they definitely popified themselves as time went on, Red Hot Chili Peppers. But, you know, a lot, admittedly, even though it wasn't like your traditional pop music of like the era, like Lionel Richie or Michael Jackson or whatever, but a lot of the stuff really that we listen to is kind of poppy in a lot of ways, don't you think? You
know? Right. I mean, kind of a well-written song, no matter what genre it is, really, when it comes down to it. You know, I like, you know, I've got bridges in my songs and stuff like that, you know, really technically written songs. And so, you know, you could, it could be whatever genre, except for maybe reggaeton. I don't know if it's possible to write a good reggaeton song, even if they tried.
Okay, fair enough.
But I can still, you know, appreciate stuff that's not in my necessary genre if it's a really well put together song. Like Hey Now, that song by whatever band that was. That's what it is, right? That was a well written song. And it's a produced, but it's definitely a well put together song. And it's a fun song.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't seem like it seems more like it's making fun of itself in a way of being a fun song versus trying to be a produced hit, even though that's what it was.
Right.
So I could appreciate other things as long as, you know, it's a well put together piece of music.
Well, that's now. I don't know if you were the same way then, but I mean, back then, I became kind of snobbish about, you know, K-Rock, and I was, you know, I kind of, it was like us versus them, like the, you know, the Depeche Mode likers versus the Guns N' Roses likers kind of a thing. And there wasn't a lot, I mean, some people probably had more maturity, they probably could manage to respect different genres, but I wasn't one of them, to be honest with you.
Right. No, I wasn't necessarily either, but then again, I still don't really want to listen to Guns N' Roses, to be quite honest.
Fine, fair enough.
That being said, you know, what's his face? Who's Axl Rose?
Yeah.
Remember, he used to wear Sin shirts.
Well,
Nine Inch Nail shirts. And he was a super, super Pet Shop Boys fan. A huge Pet Shop Boys fan.
That's funny. Axl Rose. Well, that's funny. So throughout this conversation, I've been tempted to, because it's so hard not to like go from one thing to another, like with concerts and stuff. I almost think we should save that for another.
Yeah, we definitely show. Should. We should go back to MTV because it was a huge influence.
Yeah.
For everything. I mean, I remember I would sick, and I would sleep, lay in my parents' bed and watch MTV all day long, and I would see the same videos over and over again throughout the day. But I'd be waiting for like that David Bowie video to come on, like Modern Love, or and the certain ones I really liked. But that being said, there's a lot of stuff that I know thanks to MTV, and I'm sure it's vice versa. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people who loved Rat and were waiting for, or whatever, whoever wrote Too Young to Fall in Love, or all that stuff was, you know, ended up seeing Duran Duran or whatever and knowing these Duran Duran songs they wouldn't know or whatever. I mean, I know a lot of Billy Joel songs because of the fact that
MTV.
I saw it on MTV. I know a lot of all these Van Halen songs from like Panama and.
Of course. We couldn't help
because
it.
Because of MTV.
Oh, yeah. Might as well jump.
Yeah.
You know, all that David Lee Roth. In fact, David Lee Roth, I mean, that was super entertaining stuff. Those Van Halen videos, like Hot for Teacher and Jump. I mean, you got to admit, like, from a production value, like, of the videos themselves, they were just fun.
Right.
I didn't turn it off, but, I didn't listen to Van Halen otherwise, though. But,
right,
you know. Right, definitely. Like, those guys were super clever with that, you know, and the other ones, like even Michael Jackson, I don't even really want to get into, because I always thought he was a creep, but that's a whole nother thing. But his videos were kind of revolutionary. I mean, Thriller got a little annoying because it was just played so often and it was like super long, like the full version. You know, Michael Jackson, you know, I mean, Paul McCartney.
I wasn't good enough of that, I'll be honest.
You can like him. I don't give a crap. I think he's gross.
Yeah. No, I wasn't in love with him or anything, but I enjoyed his music.
But it's fine. But I didn't like it. I didn't really like
it. Well-written songs. Like Smooth Criminal. There's a lot of great. Want to be something.
I guess so.
Well, there's a lot of classic tunes that were really well-written. But he was a weirdo. I'm not saying he wasn't weird.
I just
don't separate the two things.
Glad. But I don't think I've ever deliberately played a Michael Jackson song on my own. I don't know why. I mean, I don't need to, I guess. I don't know. But he did have some cool videos, like the video. I mean, that's the funny thing about the Beatles again, because, you know, later I became a giant Beatles fan, like later, like I've read books and everything else on the Beatles. But like Paul McCartney, Say, Say, Say video with Michael Jackson was like a big early MTV song, right? And I don't know, for whatever reason, I remember this Paul McCartney song called Pipes of Peace that was a really cool video too. So yeah, MTV was massive. It was just massive.
And he was in the video for, what was that girl? They don't know about love. And they don't care about us. I can't remember her name, but he was in that video like pretending like he was the boy in that video. I remember that from MTV. I like remember that song.
Which one?
They don't know about us, and they've never heard of love. I can't remember her name, but that was a big video. Or even like Chevy Chase being in the video for
The Paul Simon's video.
Paul Simon, yeah.
They Can Call Me Al, which is a terrible song, but yeah, of course I do. Of course I do. So I guess we kind of like lived in, you know, you tolerated, because we had no control over it. You tolerated what you watched on MTV, and then you listened to whatever you listened to on the radio. I mean,
I never told you the thing I wanted. Yeah, go ahead.
What? Go ahead.
Well, I had an idea several years ago that if I had like a bunch of money to throw away that I could use, that I wanted to one day make a museum installation of all these old 80s music videos from MTV, and you put them all on the wall throughout the whole installation, and they have headphones. So you go to each one with a headphone, and you watch the video, and you could watch the video with the actual song, or you can go to a second line where you can hear the musicians talking about what's going on when they were making the song or making the video, and the director talking about what they did making the video and all this stuff. And for each video, you can watch it. I mean, to me, there were a lot of works of art in those video days, you know, that it became this visual. I mean, it looks cheesy now when you go back to it, some of it, the visual effects of the 80s. But
you'd be like, Aha, Take On Me. It was awesome.
Right. Yeah. But there's a lot of great videos that, you know, we watched that I would love to just be able to listen to the songs and watch the video, but also, you know, have a second soundtrack where you can hear the, you know, artist and the director and maybe the production artist and whatever talk about making the video and all that stuff on the second at the museum installation for people to go see. I would love to be able to do that. I think it's a great idea.
Oh, well, you should do it.
I wish I could. And then I don't have the money. If I had the money, if anybody out there has the money, I mean, we'll do it. Because I would think it'd be awesome.
Yeah. So I was I'm looking at the time. I think we're pushing an hour. That was fast because there's so much to cover. And
yeah, we didn't even get to talk about the Rain soundtrack even.
The which one?
Purple Rain.
I know. Well, we can, yeah, we'll have to save the Purple Rain soundtrack, except for the little a little teaser that somebody gave me a copied version of that for my to me for my birthday. But
it was a youth pastor of some sort, wasn't it?
He was a youth pastor in our church. Yeah. But you know, what we haven't even touched upon is like any concerts, which we will later, and I'd like to talk about like hunting for records at stores in Orange County, just driving around and stuff, and probably other stuff. But
yeah, that's what you're talking about.
We're gonna have to cut it short, and hopefully we'll have a better week in real life than we did in the last week recording this on January 11th, but we're not going to go there because we're going to keep this light. So, all right, Scott, see you next time.
See you next
Take care.
All right, you too. Bye, everybody.
Brought by Treetop Studio in combination with Scott Martinez and Productions.